Ninth case this morning, which is U.S. versus Campbell.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. Judges, we are here today because it is our position that the sentence that was entered against Mr. Campbell by the district court was arbitrary and provided an unconstitutionally disparate sentence to his co-defendant and to other defendants who are sentenced under the Powder guidelines. John Crafton was Mr. Campbell's co-defendant, and he was sentenced a week before my client. And he was held responsible for between 15 and 40 kilograms of crack cocaine, and that yielded a sentence of 235 to 293 months. Nevertheless, the district court judge decided to apply the one-to-one ratio that had been applied in many of the cases in this district for some time. And ultimately, Crafton was sentenced to 151 months based on that one-to-one ratio. In stark contrast, Mr. Campbell came in a week later, and he only possessed 104 grams of crack as opposed to the 15 to 40 kilograms. So he had a mere fraction of crack cocaine compared to Mr. Crafton. And his guidelines ultimately were calculated under the 101. The court talked about the one-to-one, and it should only be the one-to-one, and all the research has panned out that it should be one-to-one. But when it came up at the end of the discussion about the guidelines, as it always does at a sentencing, the court said, I'm going to apply the guideline that carries 130 to 162 months, and that was the crack guideline, without any real explanation as to why. The district court had been made aware that my client's guidelines, without minor role, I even argued to take away minor role to show him that the powder guidelines for my client was 41 to 51 months. Nonetheless, he stuck with the 130 months. Now, when you compare Crafton to Campbell, you will see that there is no justification to apply the crack to my client and the powder guidelines to Crafton. Crafton admittedly dealt drugs for 9 years, and I suppose one of the most egregious things that occurred with Crafton was he was given a chance to go on bond by the judge. He went on bond, he got bond, and he physically and verbally abused his mother and continued to sell drugs, and so his bond was revoked. Also, it's a little unclear when this happened, but either right before he was taken into custody or right after he got out on bond, he threatened to kill the government informant in this case, the CS. Despite these transgressions, the district court thought Crafton deserved the powder guidelines.
What I'm hearing is an argument that the judge may have been too lenient on the co-defendant, an argument that the judge was too harsh on your client.
I think you can look at it that way, but I'm not going there. I think he was too harsh on Mr. Campbell based on this case, based on individual life sentences.
And directing our attention to that and your client's background, which I understand to be the driving consideration here, at least as I read this case, the sentence in this case didn't turn so much on offense severity but on your client's violent and drug-dealing history. Right.
He didn't have a real violent history. No.
But he had some crimes of violence. Guns, right?
Yeah, he had possession of a weapon.
Guns and drugs.
Yeah.
And the judge was impressed with that and said that he keeps coming back to this same criminal lifestyle, and so a more lenient sentence is not appropriate. And that's, you know, perfectly within the judge's discretion.
It isn't reasonable if it's unconstitutionally disparate to a co-defendant, and it is disparate to the co-defendant. The government makes light of Mr. Crafton's history, but close to it in their brief, and they never did before. They never did during the whole case. They never did during sentencing.
And well, the judge did.
Made light of Mr.
Crafton. No, not made light of it, but emphasized his criminal history.
But not to the serious nature that it was. And my point is that the criminal history differences cannot account and justify the disparity.
Why not?
Because they're not that different.
Well, that's the judge's call, not ours.
The
district judge's call.
The judge made a mistake, I believe, and ultimately there was an unreasonable sentence.
Well, he got the criminal history wrong?
No.
Okay.
He didn't do the disparity comparison as he is required to do. And if he had done it, I believe he would have seen that criminal history was not the driving force.
Again, that's his call as a qualitative sentencing matter to decide whether your client's criminal history is sufficiently bad to justify treating him differently. And then we don't have an unwarranted disparity. There's a disparity, but it's not unwarranted, which is what the language of the guidelines talks about. And to constitutionalize it, you're not going to get very far with that argument.
Well, I require myself to constitutionalize
things. Yeah,
for,
I understand.
For the future.
That's your default
for
position.
The
but
I think it's important to do that as an attorney to do that in case it moves on. But the problem I have is that the difference in the two people, Crafton and Campbell, you could equalize them and then decide what their sentences would be. You could equalize them because maybe Campbell had a little higher criminal history or he got caught more, because we see five domestic violences in Mr. Crafton's. And then you look at the magnitude of Mr. Crafton's participation. And so on balance, they're equal. And if they're equal, the powder guidelines need to be applied to both. And essentially, that's my argument.
And so your position would be, even though there's this argument, there's a lot of argument about this Fair Sentencing Act and the 3 days and whether it was long enough and where there's discussion of this Tanner case, your position would be that we could actually put that aside in the sense that it's the issue between the powder and crack, because he sentenced Crafton a week earlier using powder versus crack. I mean, I know you still want to press an argument with respect to the Fair Sentencing Act, but that could go down the tubes. You would still press your argument, or am I wrong on that?
I am. The first argument in my brief was the FSA, which
right.
I think is very important, and I think this court's decision in Fisher needs to be overruled, and I think that there's a lot going on that's going to come to light as to why the intent of the legislature was to have that apply to pending cases. So I don't want to undermine that. I left it for the second. I see my lights on it. For the second argument, because you know and I know what the status of the Seventh Circuit is right now, and I don't want to back down from that argument at all, Judge. I laid it out in my brief. I stand on my brief. I think Fisher must be overruled, and that the pending, those with pending cases should be able to be sentenced under this much fairer, not completely fair, but much fairer statute. And that would have made a world of difference for my client, because he would have had a mandatory minimum of 5. And I think, I believe that perhaps if that had been on the table, the district court would have perhaps not sentence him to 130. And I realize that I may be restricted if this court doesn't overrule Fisher to the mandatory 10. And I believe that this case should be remanded so Mr. Campbell can get the 121 months. And the reason I believe that is I think I quote Judge Rovner once. She said, every day that's extra that's spent in prison is prejudice to the defendant. And I know it's 10 months, but 10 months is 10 months. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Hiller.
May it please the court, Matt Hiller on behalf of the United States. The district court neither erred nor abused its discretion in sentencing Campbell, even in light of the co-defendant's sentence. The district court did exactly what district courts are supposed to do. It first correctly calculated the guidelines, it second considered the 3553A factors, and thirdly, it exercised its judgment to determine that a sentence at the mandatory minimum was not sufficient in this case because of Campbell's recidivist criminal history and the danger he posed to the community.
Well, why don't you start with Ms. Stomp's argument that they didn't start out on an equal basis because of the co-defendant's sentence the week before based on powder and then her client based on crack, that they should have at least been viewed equally, and then all the other factors that aggravate or cooperation and all that go into the pot?
Yes, Your Honor. The district court calculated the crack guidelines for both defendants initially, but then the district court in both sentencing hearings acknowledged that the court did not believe there was adequate justification for the disparity in the current guidelines or even in the recently passed Fair Sentencing Act guidelines. The district court felt that only the one-to-one ratio was appropriate. But the district court did not sentence Mr. Crafton based on the crack guidelines. The district court sentenced, Mr. Campbell on the crack guidelines. The district court sentenced Mr. Campbell based on the aggravating factors that Your Honor mentioned. Neither defendant was sentenced based solely on either the powder or the crack guidelines. Reviewed both the powder and the crack guidelines, determined that the powder guidelines were the only ones based on there was an adequate justification. The district court came down from Mr. Crafton's sentence based on mitigating factors and the powder guidelines. The district court came up from the mandatory minimum sentence for Mr. Campbell because of the aggregating factors. He acknowledged that the sentencing guidelines would be 41 to 51 months under the powder guidelines for Mr. Campbell, but felt that even a sentence at the mandatory minimum was not sufficient because of his background and recidivist history. Unless there are any further questions of the panel, the government would stand on its brief and respectfully request that the court affirm the district court.
Thank you, counsel. Anything further?
Not that this has anything to do with it, but I was at the sentencing. And Judge Cannelli did not sentence my client under powder guidelines. And I'll give you a quote. He started out by saying, if this were a powder case, Mr. Campbell would be looking at an advisory sentence in the range of 41 to 51 months. The mandatory minimum is there. So that means the lowest sentence that can be given is 10 years. So the question is, should I give that or should I give some other sentence? And what he did was he promptly went into giving some other sentence, and he said, I'm going to impose a sentence within the guideline range. The guideline range was the crack guideline range. So he did always use the crack guideline range, and that's on the sentencing transcript at page 39. So he never started at 41 to 51 months and then moved on with the aggravators and said, you deserve 130. He employed the 100-to-1 crack guidelines. So I'd ask you to reverse and remand for a new sentence.
You took this case by appointment?
Pardon?
You were appointed to represent your client.
I was.
The court appreciates your vigorous representation of your client. Thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement. The court stands in recess.